the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Let's read our passage, shall we? We've been thinking about the Lord's Prayer, so let's read from Matthew 6. We aren't necessarily going to read it in its entirety every week as we go through this series, but let's read it again. Let's read from verse 5 of Matthew chapter 6. It's page 918 in the Green Bible. We'll read through until verse 14 together. This is what we read. Jesus speaking, of course. "And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. This, then, is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one." So this evening we're going to spend some time just thinking about one single line. It's verse 11. "Give us today our daily bread." And already in our series so far, we've taken a look at the overall context of the theme of the prayer. We thought very specifically as well about the first two sections of it, under the titles of relationship and partnership. And tonight's theme, as we've already thought, is one of provision. But as well as thinking about what the words mean, the words that we find in front of us in the text, we're going to just expand upon them a little in order to consider something of the larger implication of how that meaning should be taken and applied in our lives day by day. You see, the overall theme of the series is living the Lord's Prayer. It's not just saying the Lord's Prayer, it's living the Lord's Prayer. So we need to look beyond the words themselves in order to try and understand something of the impact of what praying this prayer has. And then onwards towards how best to apply what it teaches. Tom Wright, in his book Matthew for Everyone, stresses the relevance of the Lord's Prayer to our everyday experience. This is what he says. He writes, "We live as Jesus lived in a world all too full of injustice, hunger, malice, and evil. This prayer cries out for justice, bread, forgiveness, and deliverance. If anyone thinks those are irrelevant in today's world, let them read the newspapers and think again." And he makes a good point, doesn't he? And in one sense, we've kind of arrived at the heart of the prayer. We're at this transition point. We're at this sort of pivot point between the concerns that we've already thought about, those that relate especially, of course, to God's program. And we're moving on into this section that deals with the specific needs that relate to God's people. And so we're into the area of sustenance and forgiveness and guidance and justice as we wend our way through the second part of the prayer. And as we notice that shift, we ought to be mindful of one very basic lesson that we should draw from the way that the prayer unfolds, and it's this. If we are faithful in putting God's concerns first, then we are better prepared to speak to him about our own circumstances. That is, I think, what we learn from the prayer, and that is a universal thought, I think, as we come to God in prayer. If we are faithful in putting God's concerns first, if we bring him praise, if we recognize who he is and what he's done, after that, we are better prepared to speak to him about the matters of our own lives. And the first focus of prayer is by necessity, God. It has to be. We bring praise to God for who he is, what he's done. And that is always the matter of first importance. But that's not to say, I don't think, that when we move on to this next section, that actually we've shifted away from the lofty and the cosmic towards the parochial and mundane, because I don't think we've done that. In fact, both Phil and Megan in the previous two talks in this series were quite clear to stress that we ought not to miss the earthbound dimension to all of the earlier phrases in the prayer. If you're here when I introduced the series, I mentioned the fact that the grammatical construction of the first section allows the phrase that we thought about last week, on earth as it is in heaven, to be attached to every one of the earlier lines. So we can read the prayer a little bit like this. Your name be hallowed on earth as in heaven. Your kingdom come on earth as in heaven. Your will be done on earth as in heaven. So all three of the petitions are in fact about anticipating and recognizing earthly reality. And so that means that moving on in prayer to talk about daily bread isn't actually to veer off course, isn't suddenly to change gear. The simple fact is that as material physical creatures, we can't enter into the joy and fulfillment of the earthly dimension of the earlier part of the prayer without sustenance, without our daily bread. So let's take a little look at some of the words, in fact, all of the words that we have in this line. I'm going to start at the end and think about the word bread. Now, to plain and simple reading, of course, the word bread speaks about one of the most basic of foodstuffs. We're all familiar with a loaf of bread. We know what it looks like, we know what it tastes like, and it's more than likely that we have probably enjoyed a slice of it today at some point in time. And in the Near East, in the time of Jesus, the word bread referred to food in general, but very specifically to the flat loaves that were made from either wheat or barley flour. In the first century Palestine, bread was immensely important. Making bread was a daily task. It's something that you did every day. Every member of the family would be involved in making bread. Every morning, family members would put olives or cheese or maybe figs into the center of a flat tortilla-type bread. They would then fold them up into a parcel, put them into a bag, into the pocket of their cloak or wherever. And this would provide the main meal for the day. This would be the meal for the journey. This would be lunch to keep them going as they went out and about in their day. And the bread they carried was both the lunch and the lunchbox. Bread made it possible for people to go about their everyday, made it possible for people to earn a living. And putting God's provision to good use day by day reminds us, doesn't it, that we're called to be good stewards of all of God's blessings. In the ancient world, of course, a steward was someone who was put in charge of their master's possessions, and he or she had this responsibility. It was the responsibility of safeguarding possessions. It was the responsibility to use them for profit and for pleasure for the master. And, of course, their responsibility was to keep accurate accounts for the master, that he may examine them and see what was being done. And being a steward was a position of huge privilege. We are called to put God's provision to us to good use day by day. We're called to be good stewards. So what else do we see in this line? Well, we see the word give right at the start. Notice then that the bread is given. And this is a clear reminder, isn't it, that what we receive from God is evidence of God's grace to us. He gives. And we see God's grace not simply in what God gives, but also in the way that God gives it. And that's important for us to see, isn't it? Because it is given as a gift. So God gives us the very basic thing that is necessary for life as a gift out of love. I think there's a danger, of course, living as we do in a society where, for the majority of us, food security is not an issue, that God's provision of daily bread becomes something we take for granted. We forget both who it is that gives it. We forget the nature of the giver, and we forget the nature of the gift. It is from God, out of love, through his grace, that we are given. The poet Maltby Babcock, a man from a very different generation than ours, he was a Presbyterian minister in the mid-19th century America. And in one of the stanzas of his poem, My Father's World, which a shortened version became a hymn, he seeks to remind his readers of the true source of even the plainest loaf of bread. This is what he writes. Back of the loaf is the snowy flour, and back of the flour is the mill. And back of the mill is the wheat, sun, and shower, and the farmer, and the father's will. And there's something about that simple language, isn't there? The line of the prayer that we've read just traces the everyday provision of bread back to its true source, back to the gracious God, back to the one that we're privileged to call Father. And yet for many of us, I think this link is kind of broken. I think all of us, in fact, are a little bit blind in some degree or another to the idea of God's care in the everyday. We miss it. It's one of the reasons, of course, why we've been taking time in our Sunday morning teaching to think about what it would look like if we took our worship of God into every area of our lives. What does it mean to take our worship of God into the mundane as well as into the Monday? You see, recognizing God in the everyday is a hugely powerful motivator to worship. But for our first century hearer, those who sat or stood in the crowd who were surrounding Jesus, they would know that bread was highly valued, and they would never handle it carelessly. People in the Near East, for instance, would never cut a knife with a knife bread. They viewed that as stabbing a friend. They would only ever break it to share it. If bread was found in the street on the dusty pathway or whatever, if there was a piece of it, it would be picked up, it would be dusted off, it would be put somewhere for a bird or an animal to find. Bread was never wasted. All leftovers were fastidiously collected and redistributed. It was an important thing to do. And we see that attention to detail, don't we, in the telling of the story of the miraculous feeding of the 5,000 in the Gospels. Just that little note, because it was an important note, that things were collected, ready to be redistributed and used. And the danger, of course, is that in taking things for granted, we become merely consumers and never distributors. I think rather sadly, we see it expressed in some of the attitudes that come into church. It's that false understanding, if you like, of what it means to worship. We come into God's presence and we ask the wrong question. Oftentimes, I think there's a danger that we can come into God's presence, we can come to church, and we can come with the question on our heart and in our mind of, what is in it for me? And we don't come asking, how can I become more like Christ and then share what I have with others? You know, might it be that in parallel with what we see going on around us in the society that we live in, that we're in danger of mirroring it to some extent or another in our Christian lives? Are we greedy consumers or generous stewards? That's the question. Which attitude expresses why we come to church? Is it what can I gain or what can I give? And that's an important question, I think, for us. We live in a society that is all about me. And yet we're called as Christians, as whole life worshippers, to give, and to give again. Notice also about this, that it is for today and it is daily. It is daily bread for today. Now, if you'd been in the crowd that were gathered around Jesus, if you'd been a good Jew, which all of them probably were, you wouldn't have failed to have made the link to the story of their ancestors who collected manna, that miraculous appearing food stuff that came and just settled onto the ground for 6 days a week in order for them to survive during the years of wilderness wandering. The story is recorded for us in Exodus chapter 16. We read this. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. Moses said to them, "It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Each one is to gather as much as they need. Take an omer for each person you have in your tent. No one is to keep any of it until morning." And as the story unfolds, we learn that no matter how much manna each family gathered, nobody had too little or too much. Again, nothing was wasted. It was collected and it was distributed. Nothing was wasted. And we read too that this manna couldn't be stored. It had to be used during the day that it was collected. Only on the sixth day could extra manna be set aside in order to eat on the seventh day, on the Sabbath. And I think this lesson from the Old Testament and the phrase daily bread gives us a clear reminder that collecting more than we need is ultimately unfulfilling. In only just a few verses on from where we've read and where the prayer is, we get these words. "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." I don't know if you've ever read Dallas Willard's book, The Divine Conspiracy. I'd recommend it. It's well worth a read. He comes up with this, which I think is very helpful. "Today I have God and he has the provisions. Tomorrow it will be the same. I will have God and he will have the provisions. So I simply ask God today for what I need today." What else do we see in our line of our prayer? Well, we see us and our. It's very important, I think, that we notice the plurality of these words. As we said right at the start of this series, this prayer doesn't include anywhere me or my. It's not about me or my, it's about us and our. This is a prayer of solidarity. This is a prayer of inclusivity. This is a prayer about community. So who are the us? Well, I think it's much wider than my family. I think it's much wider than my home group, it's much wider than our church community here at Belmont. I think the us refers to all of God's family in the first instance. So when we pray this line, we pray it in solidarity with all of God's people. It's everyone that calls God's Father. You see, I think "give us" is the logical extension of "our Father." And the us and the our are there very deliberately to prevent us from any self-centeredness. The us keeps us focusing on the kingdom. The us keeps reminding us of the things we've already thought about in the prayer. They also keep us socially aware, I think, because in reality, the us extends even further out than those who call God Father, because as we thought this morning, we're not called to hold on to what we know to be true about God. We're called to share it. We're not called to be consumers. We're called to be distributors. And that encompasses what we know and what we experience to be true about what God has given. I think giving things away is part of God's character. We're called to be kingdom dwellers. We're called to follow the king's example. So whether it's our time or our abilities or our money, we're encouraged to steward wisely and to give generously. There's no me and mine. There's only us and ours. So this line of the Lord's Prayer is all about provision, but it's also all about generosity, and it's all about faithfulness. It's also all about solidarity, and it's all about dependency. It's all about taking up the challenge to live radically different lives in a world that would want to teach us that it's all about me and mine. In his book, Darrell Johnson, a book which is called 57 Words That Changed the World, he says this: every time we take a piece of bread in our hands, we are handling an answered prayer. The only appropriate response is to say thank you. Let's pray together, and then Adrian is going to come and share communion and lead us in thoughts as we share the bread and wine together.